Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Unlikable Female Characters, the podcast about women who don't give a damn if you like them. I'm Lane Fargo, and my guest today is a very exciting one. We are talking to Courtney Summers. Courtney is the author of several novels, including the New York Times bestseller Sadie. And in 2018, Electric Literature proclaimed her a master of the bitch, which is about the greatest accolade I can personally imagine, for her years of writing nuanced, wrenching stories about angry and unlikable girls. Her latest novel, I'm the Girl, is out September 13th. Welcome, Courtney.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. This is my kind of podcast.
Well, we've been doing this show for almost 4 years now, and obviously your name has been often on our lips.
Bring a tear to my eye. I always wanted to be talked about with unlikability, like not my characters, just me.
Yeah, I want to get into that too, because, okay, so I love your books. Your books are phenomenal, and
Thank you. Indeed
have lots of unlikable female characters. But the other thing that I love about you and why I'm like a fan for life is the way that you present yourself, like on Instagram, and talk about your own work. Like, you're just the baddest bitch. You're just like, yeah, my books are amazing. Welcome to them. And I love that.
And I'm also one of those millennials that it's like scared to pick up the phone. It's a nice dichotomy.
Yeah. Everyone hates the phone.
That's valid.
Monsters when I talk on
Agreed.
The phone. So I would love to talk about your approach to writing unlikable female characters and being an unlikable female character in real life, just being like bold and talking about your work.
I thought everyone loved me. What? No.
I mean, on this show, unlikable female character is like the highest compliment
I know,
you can give.
I'm happy for it. I'm so glad to be here. It's just a moment for me, so thank you.
We are happy to have you. So why don't we talk a little bit about I'm the Girl. Tell us a little bit about the book for people who haven't been seeing all the advance buzz.
Okay, well, it's about a 16-year-old girl named Georgia Avis who discovers the dead and brutalized body of a 13-year-old girl named Ashley James, and she teams up with Ashley's older sister Nora to find and bring the killer to justice before he strikes again, but their investigation throws Georgia into a world of unimaginable privilege and wealth and without conscience or consequence. And as Ashley's killer closes in, Georgia will discover when money, power, and beauty rule, it might not always be a matter of who's guilty, but who is guiltiest. It's a queer coming-of-age thriller, and it's based very loosely on the Epstein case. So it's a feel-good novel of the year.
Feel-good novel of the year, yes. Very, very intense, this book. I was... I like to read before bed.
Oh, no, you didn't
do
that. And
I couldn't read your book before bed.
God.
No, I couldn't. I had to, like, put it down and get, like, a romance novel or something. So I was just like, I'm going to have nightmares. I need to read this in the light of day.
I respect that. That's self-care. And that's good behavior to model.
That is self-care. Yeah. So this must have been a really intense writing process for you. I saw in the little interview that's in your press kit that you were like sleeping a lot. I mean, none of us are sleeping much these
days, true.
But this couldn't have helped.
It was a horrific writing experience. I mean, I was totally immersed in the Epstein case and victim testimony and all the court documents and the news and just everything. And I was like, the purpose of this, even though I'm the Girl is its own thing, is to keep the humanity of the victims at the forefront because they went through hell just to be heard. And you never want to lose sight of that because you don't want to sensationalize subject matter like this. You want to keep the heart of it close. You want to make sure that you're doing justice and honoring these experiences. But it's so hard. This is something I chose to do to myself for the sake of this book, but it got to me. I'd like wake up with these tiny little scratches all over my face, and then at one point I had vertigo. It was like, okay, I'm doing something to myself that is not great but feels necessary. So it was an experience that I'm not eager to repeat, but I think was exactly what it needed to be at the time. You don't have to suffer for your art, but sometimes it happens.
Sometimes it does, whether you like it or not. But I mean, you can really feel that in this book, like how much emotion and care and everything that you put into it, because it's very deep in Georgia's
POV as a teenage girl who is in this situation that she has like a teenage girl's understanding of, that she doesn't understand all the power dynamics the way that an adult woman would. And that makes it, like, as an adult woman, super harrowing to read. You're like, no, don't do it. But you, like, I mean, I remember what it was like to be 16 and even in my 20s, and you know, you just don't understand all the power dynamics that are at play.
And even when you do, like, I think it's so easy to stand back and say, okay, I wouldn't. But when someone is lavishing attention and praise and positivity on you, that's very compelling. Even when you are an adult, I wrote the book about the cults where everyone joined the cult before I'm the Girl, it was the project. And I'm always at the front of my mind is like, it's just someone coming along with the right word at the right time. I don't think it really serves a book at any point to think that you're smarter than the person you're writing about or thinking that you're better than them. I never want to approach a book that way.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with these manipulative, powerful, mostly men. They customize it to the victim. So they have a different way of approaching each person, and no one's immune to that.
Right.
Like, we can all be manipulated. It just has to be the right approach for us. The project also disturbed me and I couldn't read it before bed.
Yes.
Am I remembering right that you said on Twitter or somewhere that you based the cult leader in that book like physically on Oscar Isaac?
I did. Yeah. He just had an Oscar Isaac vibe. And then when I had to make the Pinterest board for my publisher to, you know, get the vibe down, and I had all these meticulously chosen images of, like, you know, cult settings and locations and the mood, and I picked one picture of Oscar Isaac, and for the longest time, anytime anyone went to my Pinterest, it was like 500 pictures of Oscar Isaac.
I bring that up because my first book, Temper, centers around this psychopathic theater director who's manipulating everyone, and I also based him on Oscar Isaac.
God, the taste, we have taste. It's not a crime.
But what's so funny is, like, people will read Temper and they'll be like, oh, he's the worst. I can't believe these women fell for him. I would never be so stupid. And then I'll be like, he looks like Oscar Isaac. And they're yeah. Okay. 10 out of 10 would join his cult. Yeah, I don't know.
They're there. That's interesting to me that you say that, because it's something that I keep thinking about in terms of reading and response and the way that we empathize with characters who get into these kind of situations. Do you find that you get this response where it's like, because a certain type of reader can't relate to the exact specific details of how someone's been taken in or manipulated or used and abused, they're like, well, it can't happen. There's just this moment where, like, that's where they stop. It's so interesting to be able to see where the point of empathy just stops. I find that fascinating.
And they'll say it's unrealistic. And Temper as well, I based on a real life case of a theater director who was manipulating people in these
unrealistic. That's like the most realistic. Yeah. Like, theater.
I know. I love when I get reviews that are like, these people are so dramatic.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Theater kids? That's why they call them theater kids. Like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah. What was really interesting in I'm the Girl is Georgia and Matthew, the powerful man in the book, she has this very strange power exchange kind of relationship with him, and it's not sexual. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but she's a lesbian, so it's not that she's attracted to him. It's not like me sitting here going, well, I would join Oscar Isaac's cult. But that the attention, like you said, having this powerful man pay attention to her and tell her she's beautiful and tell her she's worthy, even if there's not this sexual dimension where she's physically attracted to him, like, that is powerful.
Right. I mean, the book explores how patriarchal systems of power impact the way young women move through the world and how they feel about their bodies. And, you know, we live in a patriarchy. It sucks. Facts, it sucks. It's something that has been really interesting in the homophobic sense. Some of the feedback that I've been seeing about Georgia is that she says she's a lesbian, but she cares what a man thinks about her. And I'm like, do you know who holds power in this culture, in this society? She cares about Matthew's power. She cares about being perceived as powerful in relation to Matthew's power. It is so offensive to me to hear that statement said, just as a queer person. So much of my own coming out journey was untangling myself from the patriarchy, and then to write about that experience and then have people say, well, she can't be queer, she cares about what a man thinks. It's like, really? Or like, really? Are you can we bring a little nuance into this conversation, please? Yeah, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, because living in a patriarchy, we all have to care what men do for our safety and survival, unfortunately. I wish that we didn't. like, I'm bisexual and I honestly hate like 99% of men, but you still kind of have to cater to them to keep yourself safe in public sometimes. Like, you have to be deferential. You have to, it's fucked up.
It is very, but it's like the umbrella under which we all live.
I feel like you created her and you say she's queer, so she is. They're like, I know better than the author. I can tell.
I mean, they're allowed to feel what they want, but it's hard not to call out something that's homophobic is homophobic, and that's what that response is. I would hate to be a 16-year-old lesbian who was navigating those kind of systems and then have my whole personhood called into question because I was trying to survive it.
Mm-hmm.
It's rough, but
yeah. Georgia as well, she definitely is aware of her physical appearance and the effect that it has on men. And I think, I mean, Cleo, Matthew's wife in the book, says several times, like, the men are the ones who define in our society, in our fucked up society, like, what is beautiful and what kind of beauty is valuable and all of that stuff. So she's just moving in this world where that's part of it. And I don't know. I thought it was really fascinating, and I'm mad at this random person on the internet.
It's been a couple. It's not just one. That's the interesting thing. I was like, huh. Somewhere along the line, the conversation surrounding these dynamics got really reductive. Like, come on. Yeah. I don't know. Came here with my little vendetta and I set it on your palace.
This is very much the place.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think it's important to dismantle that notion. For so long, it never occurred to me that I could be gay because I was so operating under a cis heteronormative world patriarchy. It was so influential on how long it took me to come out and to realize these things about myself. And I don't like to see these things undercut because I think they have greater implications.
It is infuriating. And as someone who writes adult books, I'll definitely have people question the sexuality of my characters. Like, if I have a bisexual character who's primarily in relationships with men on the page, like, that gets questioned. But it's not the same as when you're writing for young people where they're still figuring out their identities, perhaps, and are looking to books that have queer representation in order to learn about themselves and consider their identities. Yeah, that could be really devastating to someone.
I don't think it's devastating at any age. Really. I mean, there's such rigid ideas of how we should move through the world and be the people that we are. You're just trying to live your life, write your characters, write what you know to be true about your own experiences, and someone's going, no.
Yeah, I mean, I've been questioning the last book, They Never Learn, you know, has a sapphic romance
love
in
that
it.
Book.
And
the book. Sorry. I'm interrupting you. This is crazy, but I have to. I said it before the podcast. I just got to say it here, too. I was so clever there.
Thank you. You're always welcome to interrupt me to praise me. I mean, obviously.
Loved it.
But the book I'm writing now, the primary romance is between a man and a woman. And I'm kind of like, are all the people who loved They Never Learn because of the sapphic romance going to be mad at me? And then I'm just kind of like, what can I do? I mean, that's just what this book is about. And my next book, maybe have some other kind of queer representation. I don't know yet. And you just can't second guess it. But I do.
The conversations have expanded and in ways that I think are really critical. And they've also narrowed in ways that can be detrimental. So constantly something to navigate. And it's stressful. It's stressful. Mm-hmm. I mean, if publishing isn't stressful enough.
What? Publishing? No, it's so easy. We're recording this during the, I should say for like posterity, we're recording this during the DOJ trial about Penguin Random House and Simon.
That's been fun to watch. Love those tweet threads.
Oh God, so angry on the internet. Just lots of screaming. but we will not go, into that. Just for posterity, in case people were wondering what we were like.
We're making faces.
We were referencing.
We can't see each other's faces, but we know we're making them.
Definitely. Okay, let's talk about the relationship between Georgia and her love interest, Nora, because I thought that was so well done, the way you write about the desire between them. And I feel like I read so many YA books where it doesn't feel like it felt to be a teenager, because like when we're teenagers, we're just like so horny all the time and like obsessed with people, and like crushes are just devastating. And you really tapped into that with the way that Georgia looks at Nora and thinks about her.
Georgia's incredibly thirsty for Nora, which I think it was really important for me to have desire equated with, she's fully into Nora's body, her physique, her aesthetic. You know, she's a girl who loves other girls. She's just a lesbian. She's into it. And I wanted to make sure that was on the page. I have had my sexuality question in relation to how I wrote the romance in this novel because of how much the girls want each other. And a friend of mine called it soft focus lesbianism, that like years of soft focus lesbianism in the media, where their female attraction was positioned as existing outside of physical desire, has made people feel like it's exploitive to see it when you see it. Like the suggestion that I'm straight because of how I write the female desire feels like it's a consequence of years of that.
Yeah, because it's like, at least back in the 90s, yeah, that's what I mean. Whatever, like you would see these like more carnal depictions of lesbian desire, and it was always from the male gaze point of view, where it was like performative, it was for men, it wasn't really for other women. And I mean, as a queer woman, I definitely enjoyed that stuff too, but I knew that it wasn't aimed at me. And now people, they're just not used to seeing that more physical desire in a way that's for women, that's not this possessive and performative sort of thing, but just appreciation. Georgia just appreciates, yeah, Nora. And I love how she talks about how she's like sharp and harsh and looks kind of mean, because I too am very attracted to women, right? It's who look kind of mean.
Every time Georgia sees Nora, she's like, Nora looks terrible, I love it. You know, she's like, she's grief-ridden, yeah, and she's not sleeping, and you know, she looks a little hungry too. Wow. That's always what she's saying about Nora, but she likes this hardened girl who plays on the volleyball team with her muscly quads.
Relatable. Absolutely. Briefly, I'd also like to touch on Ashley, who is the young girl who's found murdered at the start of the book, that kind of kicks off the whole plot. Because
poor Ashley.
I know, but you did such a great job of humanizing her and making her a full character, even though we don't ever really get to meet her.
Thank you.
Like the scene where Georgia goes into her bedroom and everything's the way that Ashley left it, like her teddy bears on the bed and her underwear on the floor. I mean, that was just heartbreaking, those details. I felt like I knew her even though she wasn't on the page, and it went so beyond what usually it's like, oh, the dead girl who kicks off the plot. Like, she's a real person, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, thank you. I never want to put a dead body, a dead female body, especially in a book, for the sake of having a dead body. Like, that just feels inherently wrong to me.
Yeah.
And with Ashley, the thing that I want to do is I feel like every character has something a little different to say about her, and that was the point, because who is one thing in their lives? Like, no one. And it is so easy to start getting really reductive about dead female bodies. So, you know, you have Ashley's best friend, Liv, who's a little in love with Ashley and just is fiercely protective of her. And, you know, they're like a little fearsome twosome. And you have Nora, who knows that Ashley's spiraling and is burdened with that kind of responsibility. Then you get George in Ashley's room. And I think George really sees something in... she's not always quite making the connection that they have, because George doesn't want to see herself as a victim like Ashley became, but she can see the want in Ashley. And then she goes into Ashley's room and she sees the teddy bear, like you said, in the poster with the mom on it. Ashley's very much missing her mother. She's a girl without a mother, and that is like a very hurting part of her, which drives most of what happens to her. And it was just important to me not to have her be any single one thing definitively in the text, because it would be. And especially at 13, like, my God.
The stuff with Ashley, like, we're so used to seeing female bodies as depicted by men, crimes against women as depicted by men. And then when we do it ourselves as queer female authors, we question everything about it. Like, whenever I have a dead woman in a book, or even like consider, I actually haven't done that yet, but I've considered it and kind of talked myself out of it, because I'm like, oh, that's so, I don't want to do that, and I don't want to. And it's like, we're the ones who should be doing it if anyone's going to do it, because we're going to be thoughtful about how we're presenting this person, and it's not just going to be like this dead girl corpse that no one cares about. It's going to be like somebody who's a character and has like a full life before that, and the death impacts people. And but yeah, I've talked myself out of it so many times, because I'm just like, oh, I don't want to be like that.
See, that's like the sign that you won't be like that. It's the people that don't think and agonize about these things that always go out there and then give us the story that we're like, really? That's the best you could do? And it's the people that are like agonizing over it that could offer something. You know, there's something meaningful to be had there. You should be upset, like, constantly, when you're doing that kind of writing. So, like, that's a sign you should do it. If you're upset, do it.
Yeah. That's your writing advice, if you're upset.
It's my whole writing approach. If you're upset, do it. I've been upset for, like, 14 years.
Love it. Yeah. Okay, well, I would love to talk about, like I mentioned earlier, your whole... I don't want to say your brand.
Oh, you can call it a brand. Go ahead.
your brand, which is just like being very bold and outspoken and controversial. And I am so inspired by it, honestly. Mm-hmm. Your social media presence is one of the ones that I look at and I'm like, yes, Courtney is doing it.
You have the good vibe too. You're out there and you're just like, hey, take it. That's cool. You're doing it.
I'm trying for sure. But I loved that thing you did a few years ago. It was like big me energy.
That's off my grid now.
That was so cool.
It was an Instagram moment with the big me energy, and it was like a challenge to do four things. And it was just basically like hyping yourself up. And a lot of people got in on it because people always need encouragement. There always has to be someone who's like, okay, I'm going to do it. And it's okay if you do it. And everyone's like, oh, it's okay if I do it. Okay, I'll do it. So just do it.
This is something that women are not encouraged to do, to like hype ourselves up and brag about our work and be proud of ourselves. Even like we're socialized to be kind of like, oh yeah, I wrote this book, but if you don't like it, that's okay. Or like, don't look at me or whatever. And that's why I'm so inspired by you and the way that you present yourself.
Well, publishing also is very cool to be published, and there's a lot to be grateful for. But because it's so hard, there's that overwhelming sense that you should only be grateful all the time for everything. And then when you're a woman, and that's like generally how people want women to approach anything anyway, it's like, wow, you're double compounding it. So I was just like, you know what? Why would I write a book I didn't want people to read? And why would I act like I didn't want them to read it? Like, that's not appealing. I mean, my ego might not be appealing to other people, but, you know, if I'm going to put myself out there for the opinions of anyone, I should be at least sure of my own, because what else is there?
Well, your ego is very appealing to me, and I wish more women had that ego. And I'm always saying I like women who are a little bit arrogant, like we should be, because we're never going to be arrogant like a mediocre white man. Like, just is born into this world being. It's the same thing where we're going to think about how we're affecting people and the things that we're saying. We're conscientious humans, but we could stand to have a little ego.
I think so. I mean, I think, again, if you, like, for writers specifically, I'm going to speak to writers because it's what I can speak to. It's like, if you sat down and you had the hubris to write a novel and you didn't do it because you want no one to read it. So, like, channel just a little bit of that. And tell people why you wanted them to read it. You had something to say. That's objectively a beautiful thing. So say it. And don't say sorry first. Just say it. I'm so tired of apologizing. I'm so tired of hearing people, I'm sorry, I'm self-promoting. What, on Instagram, the self-promotional platform? It's all promotional. It's all content. Just enjoy yourself and tell people you're great.
Amen. I agree. Well, we're about running out of time here, so I guess my next question is, what are you working on now, if you can tell us, or is it a secret?
I'm working on myself.
Oh, God. I feel that.
That's really it, though. I mean, this has been, feels like nonstop since Sadie, honestly. So there was Sadie, and there was the project, and right after the project, there was I'm the Girl, and now there's I'm the Girl promo cycle, and it's like, I deserve a nap.
You do.
So that's what I'm vibing right now. And there's, you know, some ideas in the back of my head, but I'm always like, you must relate to this, kind of led by anger, you know, the thing that's just, yeah. So it's like right now, I'm still angry about all the stuff that fueled I'm the Girl. So once that works, it won't ever totally work its way out of my system. Once something else that makes me angry sort of starts sharing space with it, I'll have a new idea, I'm sure. But right now I'm just in a suspended state of a certain kind of rage as it relates to my promo cycle.
Yeah, the book I'm writing now, I'm trying to like write based, I mean, it's still kind of angry, like, let's be real, but I'm trying to write based on more like joy and things that bring me pleasure.
What's that like?
I'm like, who am I? I don't know. It's strange. Like, it's just bizarre every day. I'm having fun, but I will see.
I like that. You're like, it could make someone feel good, so I don't know.
I don't know.
Sometimes it makes me feel good, so I don't know.
It doesn't feel normal, but I mean, I'm still angry just in general at the world. And then I'm going to write a second Scarlett Clark novel after this. So I'll like cycle back.
Okay. Okay. You will write me. I'm pretending that's for me and me alone.
Okay. That'll motivate me to do it. Honestly, I'll be like, Courtney's
waiting. I am waiting. That was so fucking good. I was just, oh man, I don't want to ruin it, but I just want to say why it's clever. It was so, you know, when you just read good craft and like the little hairs on your arms stand up and you're like, there's someone who knows what they're doing. And it's just like such a good moment. That's what that was like for me when I was reading it.
Ah, thank you.
I got the little chills so and everything. And it's hard. Like, do you find that like as a published author, it just sort of changes your relationship with reading? Yeah. So like when you do fully immerse into a book, you're like, oh God, yes. This is the thing. This is what I love. This is why I want to go out there and do what I'm doing. It's because I can make other people feel like how this is making me feel right now. So it's just so nice. Yeah, that was a moment with your book that I had, and I was grateful for it. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. That is that really is going to motivate me to write this sequel.
I'm waiting. I'm ready. Wait, so you haven't started it yet?
I have an outline, but I haven't written any of it yet. I've been waiting until I'm done with this.
This joyful
project,
novel.
Which has taken me for years.
This, the joyful
so
one.
So many years. Yeah.
Okay, well, what if... No.
I'm almost done with it. Don't worry.
I mean, I'll tell you whatever next Lane book I can get, but I'm just like, what if... Just for a minute, it's write a whole other novel right now.
Right now. This minute.
Right now.
The other one, I don't know why, like, I keep saying it's joyful, but it's like a adaptation of Wuthering Heights, which is, like, so fucking messy. That's what I think
what
is joyful.
Oh my god, okay, this is, like, we're so alike. I love it. Like, the things that I take joy in, it's just, like, you know, like, did it make you miserable? Did it, like, really hurt? Did it make you tense? Did it make you clench your jaw? It's, like, that's my happy place. Where yeah. you want to, like Wuthering Heights is one of those, like, I'm going to bite my knuckles and scream into them kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, I'm having a great time.
So it brings you joy, but it's not like joyful. It's just the thing that's bringing you joy.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah. I guess it's like more motivated by like angst and like
angst
emotion.
Angst is great.
Than
angst is
anger.
Valid.
Yeah.
Angst is anger adjacent. Okay. So
that's true.
You're still in the right wheelhouse. And then, you know, you've got something simmering with the next Scarlet book, like, you know. You got to let it build to a boiling point. So I can respect this weight now, I guess.
Yeah, I started adding to a file, like, when I would see men who annoy me on TV or whatever. Like, I was watching this episode of House Hunters. And
oh, my God.
Really smarmy realtor. And I was just like, Scarlett's going to kill a man like him. And I, like, wrote it down.
Oh, my God. I love that. That is my... Okay, that's my favorite thing that I've heard today, quite honestly. No, it's just like... I just picture you walking through the streets with, like, a little notebook. Like, huh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm just watching for a
and a red pen.
In a fictional way, not really.
Right. Wink, wink.
Well, it's been such a delight to talk to you. This has brought
this
me joy.
This has brought me joy, too. This is like such a fun little breakup in with the rhythm of these long summer days.
And I can't wait to see what you write next when the anger builds to a point where you're ready to. But you definitely deserve a nap after
this
promo cycle.
I just needed someone to say that to me.
Could you tell the listeners where they can find you on the internet?
They can check me out on my website, CourtneySummers.ca, or they can follow me on Instagram, SummersCourtney, or they can subscribe to my newsletter, the link to which is on my website. They can just Google me.
And your newsletter is one of my favorites that I like actually read instead of just...
Oh my god,
just,
thank you. That's like a super, super good compliment. I read your newsletter, but I actually read your newsletter. That's my favorite compliment, actually. That's hard to grab people with a newsletter. I'm just thinking about the way that I read newsletters right now. I'd hate to meet myself. What kind of note was that to end on? The perfect one?
I think so. I think that's good. Awesome. Well, I'm the Girl will be out in stores at the time this airs. And thank you so much, Courtney.
Thank you, man. This was so cool.
That's it for this episode of Unlikable Female Characters. Don't forget to subscribe, and you can also follow us on Twitter at UnlikableFCPod for updates, book recommendations, and angry feminist rants. Our website is unlikablefemalecharacters.com, and we're also on Instagram at UnlikableFemaleCharacters. Thanks for listening.